is the convening of the Board of Equalization and Review by Tax Administrator Jody Ray. Jody, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, great. I'm going to turn this over to you.
Okay, the first thing we need to do is convene at the Board of E&R.
Okay, the floor is now open for motion.
I make a motion we go into the Board of Equalization and Review.
It's been moved and properly second. Motion made by Commissioner Ali and second by Commissioner Atkins. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it. We're now sitting as the Board of Equalization and Review. Thank you, Jody.
Mr. Chairman, this evening we do not have any appeals scheduled to be heard. We do have some scheduled for our next meeting on June the 1st. I will give an update. We had approximately 307 informal appeals, which represented 1.6% of our total parcels, which means to me that our values are pretty accurate. We've made some changes. Initially, we started out with approximately 5.55% countywide increase. After we reviewed these informal appeals and the changes we've made, we are now at 5.31% increase. I have three appeals with one taxpayer that's already scheduled for June the 1st. Taxpayers have until the board adjourns on June the 1st to appeal their value, so there could be more then. But as of right now, that's all we have.
Okay. Great, Jody. Thank you. Very good work. It kind of substantiates the work that was done for the county, and I'm sure I think that says that most citizens respect what we've done, but they do have the right of appeal, and we're here to hear any concerns that they might have. But thank you very much, and thank your team for the great work that they've done. Do you need
any? Yes, sir. And you're going to need to recess until June the 1st.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, motion is open.
I make a motion we recess until June the 1st meeting for the Board of Equalization and Review.
Move the second. Second that we
Commissioner May more seconds.
To June the 1st. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Aye.
Ayes have it. We are recessed as the Board of Equalization until June the 1st. Thank you. Great. Next up is our Economic Development Director, Steve Biggs, who's going to update us on our efforts concerning the San Suzy Ferry and any economic development other initiatives. Steve?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you for letting me be with you tonight. I know the San Suzy Ferry thing has upset a lot of people, and especially those that really enjoyed going on different ferries from around the country. It is a rather big tourism thing, and a lot of people like to go to lighthouses. A lot of people like to go to different places, but there's a lot of people, that's what they travel to do, is go on different ferries. But I wanted to update you, since y'all have asked what our options were. I spoke with Jerry Jennings, who is head of Division One for NCDOT, and Jerry felt real good about us working toward a reimbursable agreement. They just do not have the funds to keep it going, according to him. I mean, they're begging legislation right now for more money. They have a lot of money they paid out for land purchases, and I'm sure Commissioner Goodwin could tell you a lot more about that than I can, but anyhow, Jerry said it might be that we could talk about a MOU allowing the county itself to contract operations directly. But he did say bottom line is that they, being DOT, would certainly work with us any way they possibly could to keep it running if we identified funds. So, to try to identify funds, I talked with Robin, of course, and I've been looking, trying to find monies, and she has too. But at the same time, I contacted William Bridgers who Jerry asked me to contact about the actual operation of the ferry. Wynn sent me a spreadsheet that shows since July 1 of 2019 to April the 26th of 2020, the ferry has been closed for 175 days. And the thing is, it's the time of the year that the tourists are more than likely here. In July, it was closed for 15 days. In August, it was closed for 24 days. In September, it was closed for 24 days. I mean, you see where we're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Wynn what the deal was. I said, you know, because on the spreadsheet, it said because of high water. So I asked him, was it due to water over the San Susie Road? You know, when you get to the bottom, it's unpaved.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the river that was actually too high? Excuse me. He said that it was really difficult to say. There are times it's a matter of water on the unpaved portion of the road, and times the water is just too high for the vessel itself, for the ramp, to meet properly at the landing. He did say that DOT had investigated raising the unpaved road, but environmental and cost considerations presented action on their part. He said that would be very expensive. Again, trying to find grants, we asked a question, trying to look at different type grants. If funding was available, would DOT allow us to put like a concession stand or kayak dock or camping spots or something like that on the property? And Wynn said that was something that we would have to talk about, but he would have to talk about it with higher-ups than himself.
Mm-hmm.
So later that afternoon, I heard back from Sterling Baker, who is, I guess, second in command, for lack of better terms, for this area. He said that these requests would probably not be permitted, and the reason that they wouldn't be is that the area that the state owns is, you know, so small in size that it probably wouldn't accommodate what we were looking to do. They've got a small parking area down there for the boat ramp, and really that's about it. It's a very small area. So, but again, we're continuing to look for any opportunities to keep this ferry afloat somehow, some way. I did want, because it had come up about what was Hertford County doing, I do know for a fact that their ferry vessel is in Mann's Harbor, being serviced like ours was 2 years ago.
Right.
And according to DOT, they're not going to return that vessel until they find more money in their budget to operate all of these cable ferries. Now, again, if Hertford County was to come up with the monies and they get through with it, and you know, they would send it back then, but it's a total of $85,000 a year.
What does that cover, Steve? $85,000, is that total in terms of salaries, expenses, maintenance, the work?
It covers the operational cost of it that they actually pay a contractor for. You know, it's run by a contracting service, so that pays for the contracting service and any other maintenance that would have to be done on it. DOT does that themselves.
Okay.
Any extra maintenance.
Right.
And part of that contract, I read part of it the other day, you know, that's keeping the properties down there clean, mowed, the building that's down there, keeping it clean inside, the restrooms clean, trash picked up, stuff like that. But, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but anywhere you save $85,000 and you save another $85,000 and you save, you know, all of a sudden we're talking real money, as they used to say.
Do you have any kind of car count?
It was in that article.
Yeah, the average of 7 cars a day.
Yeah.
And I think Marcus Ferry was averaging 13. But it's seven cars a day, and it being shut down, like I said, 175 days out of the last, 250 days, 300 days or whatever it's been, you know, that's...
But a lot of that shutdown is on that dirt road portion, right? Because it has been low for years. It doesn't take much to flood that side
at all. At all. And what he was saying again is when the vessel pulls up, the higher the water, the lower the road, then, you know, when they go to put the mechanism down that you drive off of, mm-hmm. and you got a space that's a foot in between.
Right. Sure, sure.
It's, you know, it's going to tear a car to pieces trying
Lord,
to get off.
I know you can already tell me how much it costs per car that is.
I was trying, I couldn't figure out seven cars per year, per day per year, is it seven per 17 out of 125? I didn't have enough.
But you were trying.
I was trying.
So, Steve, did he give us any indication?
I didn't sue him when they dropped the car in
yeah.
the water.
Yeah. Was there any indication? Because they said their plans are at some point to reopen, but did they give any kind of anticipated date or how soon? Or?
Mr. Chairman, to be quite frank with you, and just conversations that I've had with three different people now, mm-hmm. I think it'll be 3 or 4 years before you'll get it back.
But let me say this. If you listen to the governor's call today, right, and he had representatives from the House and the Senate, and one of the things they did say is that they plan to give additional money to DOT because they were already having difficulty before and now, didn't say how much, didn't say, you know, I guess that's in the next wave. But I'm wondering if we have a chance of getting additional money and whatever they allocate to DOT to cover things like this, or, you know, at least to be able to try to get that request considered as a part of whatever funding they're going to do.
Well, unfortunately, again, and I've heard this from more than one person, DOT, you know, this is about the poorest division that there is,
yeah.
Division 1. But DOT was broke long before this fire started.
For sure.
Commissioner Lee and I sit on the RPO, yeah. DOT's been a long time of not having money. I've served on the U.S. 1764 Association also. And, you know, that's the one thing that every one of, not only in Division 1, Division 4, all of them complain about all the time is, you know, it takes a lot of money to run DOT. And I think now they're really dead serious. And again, Representative Goodwin might, I'm sure he knows a lot more about it than I do, but they're just broke. I mean, I hate to say it, they're broke.
Well, I'm sure that's the case. But, you know, I think our citizens will want us to try to do every single thing we could and
yes,
can
sir.
Do
yes, sir.
To try to keep this ferry afloat. And we do have a resolution on the agenda that we're going to consider. But, you know, if it comes down to being able to try to find some funds or the chance of any matching dollars out there or whatever that might help towards this, or, I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but $85,000 in today's world is kind of tough to come up with.
It sure is. I
sent Representative Howard Hunter the information because he represents Hereford County, and he sits on the board for Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. or on that committee. So he sent me a message back saying he was going to send it, and I tried to find the name of the gentleman that he was going to send it to, but I'm assuming maybe the chairman of that committee. So, and I told him, I said, we need to do what we have to do to keep these ferries in both of these counties. So he's aware of it and working on it.
Good.
Mr. Morrison,
yes.
Two points that were made. To answer Commissioner Atkins' question, it's $97.14 per call. Secondly, I know the people that the entity that's been operating is a for-profit entity. So that means there's I'm not saying it can be done
cheaper.
A whole lot cheaper, but I don't know anybody that's in business that tries to work except in these exceptional times without making a profit. And at one point in time, I was in a lawsuit with them, so I know that they we're making a profit off of this. So it might be possible to create some sort of nonprofit organization. If the government, if the county took it over, you know, we're not, that's not our objective is to make a profit, it's to supply sure. services. So it could be done cheaper. I don't know how much cheaper.
And what that's a good point. It's something to certainly consider, right? And we're going to continue our look for funds, right,
well,
to be able to help.
We all.
We have to June 1st, is that correct?
Yes. June
13th.
13th?
Okay.
13th. So I wonder what will happen if they abandon this project. What will happen to these ferries, the actual ferry itself, the boat? Where will that go?
I'm totally guessing here, but I guess it would either stay here. That's the way they made it sound to me, or we go to Man's Harbor. I don't know.
It'd be crazy not to put it in dry dock. I mean, just to leave it there in the water if they're not planning to open it anytime soon, right? Would be.
I guess not
what I'm saying. I guess my point was if it's going to be abandoned, I would think it could be bought pretty cheaply if the county did at some point take the project to it.
That certainly cuts down on the days that it's available to run. I don't think it's a lack necessarily of, you know, people who want to use it, but that road has been bad for years.
Oh, yeah.
A bad rain and it's closed.
And they were very adamant about not spending money to fix that because of the environmental cost. You know, and going through the, I mean, they were very, very adamant about it. If we were going to do that, we'd have done that years ago, you know.
That's how I see it, our problem there.
Chair.
Yes.
Chairman Wedson.
Yes. Commissioner Bazemore.
Yes. I truly believe that we need to explore all options again, and we really do need to keep the ferry open, because that is one of our main tourist attractions. And to lose it, you know, we are dying. So I think we need to try to do whatever we can to keep the ferry open. It's very few in the state of North Carolina, and I would love to see it stay open. And I think that all of us should get together and come up with ways, or all of us explore ways to maintain the ferry.
I agree.
It's out there somewhere.
Yeah, I think we all kind of share your sentiments. I think it's going to come down to really being able to find the money, you know, to do it. Lord had a great suggestion, and maybe there's other ideas that we could look for, some additional grant dollars, not have to dig totally into our coffers to do it. I wonder if there's any benefit of working together with Hertford in terms of looking for resources, or is that just... something that
we will certainly be more than glad to try that effort.
At this point, Steve, I think we just need to, as Commissioner Bazemore said, don't leave any stone unturned.
The one thing I might would say, though, about the ownership of it is that the $85,000 pays the contract. Whenever there's maintenance that needs to be done on it, if I'm not bad and mistaken, it was like $200,000 worth of maintenance that was done on it a year and a half. 2 years ago, something like that. All that was, the state took care of every bit of that. So that was not included in any of the
so
the ownership.
So that was basically labor going on the ferry.
That's
operation cost.
That and keep the gatehouse kind of open and cleaned and operational.
All right. Any additional questions or comments? Commissioners on the phone, any other questions for Steve or any other comments?
No, I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Next, ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted. And when I say delighted, I truly mean that, to have our state representative, Mr. Eddie Goodwin, here with us today. He's here in person, not on the phone. So, Representative, we're delighted to have you here. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Wesson, and the fellow commissioners, and those on the phone too, and Mr. Warren, and even Mr. Smith over here. I couldn't help but sitting in the room so I could hear the conversation about the ferry. You know, if you want it, this would be a good time to try to get it from the state, because like everybody said, DOT is broke. They've gone way below the threshold to draw down funds that they were supposed to do. and that's not good. So what are you going to, we're in a conundrum. What do we do? Do we slap the hand and cut them off, or do we have, what, do we let them slap our hand and give them more money? That's what it's going to be. Because a lot of these projects that have been delayed are really hurting that MAP Act and other things that they've done. They cut off the mowing in most of District 1, my district, months ago. By my house and by the fall now, it's about waist high. So I was mowing around the barns this morning, so I just took the tractor and mowed down from the barn to the house. You know? And everybody says, called up, says, hey, can you do mine? if you pay me, I'll do it.
Now, if we ate the operating cost of that 85, and, you know, do you think they would still keep the maintenance piece for us? Because to do both of them, it's 200-some thousand bucks. There's no way.
If they turn the boat over to you, you could pay them to do that maintenance piece. You know, but those ferries are different than the regular ferries. Those ferries, like you got at San Susan, and I think it's four of them in North Carolina now. Those ferries, you can pick them up and put them on a trailer and haul them. You don't have to run them through the water, navigate that to get there like you do with the big regular ferries. So about every 4 or 5 years, it may cost a big amount to maintain that vessel. And then I'm assuming you get a certificate of inspection on that boat. You know, the Coast Guard's got to come in there. They check all the whales and check everything else and give you a certificate of inspection. Otherwise, you would be an operator. If you're hauling humans, you got to have that COI. You know, so that's an important thing.
I would never get you to put that in my trailer.
The thing I worry about is if we took it over, even for a short period of time, a year or so, then they, DOT, decided to take, they'd never take it back from us, would they?
Nope.
Never.
No, because what's
You know, so maybe we could reach an agreement with them that we'd operate it for a certain period of time. But
I think something could come to terms on something there. I know when I was director of the ferry division, they were talking about then getting rid of those cable ferries that are running in the state. And I think one of them might, in the western part of the state, I think, has been turned over or has been something. I
suspect a big part of the reason is that number that Lloyd just gave us too, would have $97 per call or something.
Yeah.
It really does not make financial sense.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah. And of course, right now, the DOT has kind of been over like this, you know? So, if you wanted to make a move on them, this would be a good time to make a move on them, I can tell you that. I mean, because if I was there and said, hey, these people want to take $85,000 off your hands, you know? Yeah.
Well, we want you to take it back in 3 years.
Exactly. As long as they'd agree to take it back, that's the
Wait a minute. I've heard a joke about, I can't remember, about a guy got married this man's daughter, and he tried to bring her back. He said, no. And he said, I do. She's no longer mine. She's yours now. But not unless we got other comments or questions about that, we'll move on. I don't know what y'all want to ask me or what you want me to talk about. Probably the coronavirus bill, I would imagine.
Certainly, and about the legislature. I know you guys have been back in session, so you know what can we expect and the whole works.
Well, up until this past week, I would say, you know, sometimes it wasn't that pleasant in there. You know, with some of the arguments and animosity, but this week I didn't see any of it. People coming over talking with each other, you know, more so as the session had gone on before. We start off, especially the new people, we start off just meeting everybody, and some of them I knew from before anyhow, and we're like this, and then we start doing like this. And this week started coming back like this, so, you know, but then everybody's got different philosophy about things, you know, and sometimes that comes out. But we passed that bill, that coronavirus bill, and that was out of the House, that was 120-0. That was a unanimous bill. And we were not doing it by Zoom. Bodies were in the seat. Some had masks on, some had gloves on, some did not have masks on.
Some were sitting on the floor and some in gallery.
They changed that. Okay. And because the way things were going and we had, you know, they put check out temperature when we come in and write everything down. And we got certain guidelines that we didn't go from office to office to go see guys you're working on a bill with, someone that we stayed where we were, so there was not much moving around. No public came in, no lobbyists were in there, nobody was in there except, you know, the staff. And some of that was minimized. And they tried to vote, have us vote in waves. They had wave 1, 2, 3, and 4. Well, when you hear that bell ring, you know, and that means there's so many minutes you got to be in there, and the doors were closed and everything. We all got up and left and went in there. So the speaker come up and said, well, I see we're not voting in waves today. You know, so, but it still worked out fine. But that's the first time they've ever had proxy votes. They had a lot of proxy votes, probably 35, 40 proxy votes between the two sides. Because I gave them a proxy Friday afternoon. I'd been up there since Monday. I said, I'm going home. We were through, and the Senate had the bill. And then we'd vote on it, come back to us, and we'd vote on it Saturday. And like I said, I think before everybody come in, I got halfway between Zeppelin and Rocky Mountain. The speaker's office called me, his office manager. She said, Ed, talking about sweet there, Ed, would you be available for tomorrow to be here in person, you know? I said, who told you to do this? So, it was the speaker. I said, why? And she told me why, which made sense, you know. And I said, sure. But I'm sure he called some of the other ones because there was still a lot to vote on proxy on each side, you know. And it was curious about how they were going to do it. And you give your vote to the majority leader that, on either side. And he would call and talk to the people. And if you wanted to, you could listen to the conversation and everything and ask Representative Wesson, how do you vote? So they changed that somewhat and just say, you know, because you looked at it, there was no yay or nay, everybody was yay. So the following people vote yay and then read all the names. And they had signed a document and everything and had a phone call that the rest of us could listen to, that that's the way they wanted to vote, and did that on both sides. So that went pretty good. And there's still some things, there's protests out there, you know, nasty. I walked by the window, looked out, saw several people I knew, and oh, they wanted us to come out there bad. I said, well, I know better than that. And tomorrow, same thing. They sent me all kind of emails, said, all right, we're going to look for you tomorrow. I said, well, you can be in Raleigh, I'm going to be in Eaton. Or I can join Cat. So, and you can understand their angst and what's going on, you know. Like we were talking earlier, that lawsuit out of Virginia, that church, that got a summons or a ticket or whatever for having church. They had 16 members of the church and a 200, over 200 capacity sanctuary. And they sent the law in there and gave them a summons or a ticket or whatever. And it's already been to the Supreme Court. And it was just a couple of weeks ago. And this decision came down yesterday. Said that the governor overstepped his bounds. He has no right to step on the religious freedoms of the people. Then everybody said the same thing. Why it's all right in Walmart and it's not all right in mom and pop restaurant out here? That's what troubles a lot of us. These small businesses are suffering like all what. If some of them go down, go out of business, they're never coming back. A lot of them will never come back. And what is small business to us? That's what drives the train. But just let me give you some highlights on that bill. I'll give you what you like first. Some things you may disagree with. But $300 million for local government coronavirus reserve. Total, it was $1.5 billion bill, and there's another one coming behind it. And I sit there and think, where is the money coming from? Us, you know, but then the state of North Carolina had set aside a lot of money. We had a couple of $1 billion in reserve, and some of this was federal money under the Act, Recovery Act, that was sent down. But $300 million for local government coronavirus reserve. Now, I've got a lot of calls on that one. Also, to go along with this one, $100 million for counties. And you can imagine why I'm getting a lot of calls on that. all the municipalities in that kind of, you know, why is it going to, I mean, my hometown, but I didn't even know it was in there yet. I hadn't even got through the 198 pages to read the daggone thing. And I got that, and I was getting all these emails, and it was from illustrious town of Edenton, which he lives in it, but he's not involved in the government anymore. And they were upset. This is not fair. Well, I reminded some of them as a former county commission chairman. I said, the town is part of the county. If the county gets some money, will that not benefit the one town in this county? You know, y'all are a little bit different, but same thing. They argue over that. But I think that's a good thing. Go Leaf was, I'll jump around, Go Leaf was encouraged and given money to do it, a pile of money, to give grants to the counties. Now, one thing that we were trying to push, a lot of us were trying to push in this bill, was the differentiation of the tier system. We said, we understand, we appreciate any money that's allocated to our counties at a tier one. And when you come back this way, most of our counties are tier one.
Sure.
I mean, all of mine are. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't think you should treat the tier one county is the same as you do the richer county. You know, whatever you're waiting to re-engage everybody and come out of this shutdown, well, you can't apply those same principles to bring Wake County out of it to us. And in Wake County, it would take a right good while to bring Wake and Mecklenburg back online. It wouldn't take that long to get Burt T back online, or Chowan County, Terrell, Washington, Camden, Equipment. So they started paying a little bit of attention to that, and they did put some tier stuff in those bills for the local government and stuff.
Can I ask a question while you're looking? Can you tell me if all 100 counties is receiving that money, or just the counties that did not receive the federal money?
Yes and no.
Okay.
They tried to balance it out. The tier one counties were supposed to have been given preference. And I think most of them were getting back $500,000, $250,000, $500,000. You may want to spend $85,000 for a ferry. You know? I did that math quick and easy. I know how he is with math. I've seen him calculate and tell him things before. Isn't that right, Mr. Smith? $50 million for rural and underserved communities for broadband. There's three different things in this bill addressing broadband. And we're fighting like I don't know what. Mr. Nguyen, Roanoke Chowan, was a big help to me, a big supporter last time when I pushed that bill. Put all the broadband for Tier 1 rural counties, put it on the infrastructure owned by the electric co-op. Next thing you know, everybody thought that was crazy. The electric co-op came in and said, we support this wholeheartedly. Now what are they going to do? They were not expecting that, but all the rural co-ops said yes. And Mr. Nguyen did it over here, and it pushed him up to be the president of the Electric Co-op Association for the United States. So it worked. $100 million for counties, that's the money that you can spend. $300 million for local government coronavirus relief reserve, that's reserved for different action. Mm-hmm. But then $100 million for counties, and that's where that division will come up, the math will come up, and what you'll get. $85 million for state government operations, $300 million for transportation operations. I do not know. I know DOT, like Steve said, is broke and they need a lot of help. That $300 million will not get them above the line, but it'll keep them from shutting down. Now, we will have to give them money again. They have gone so far along the threshold. Of course, when I first got elected and went up there, one of the first things, and I was put on the Transportation Committee and the Transportation Oversight Committee, and we had been arguing like cats and dogs. You know, I can understand what some are saying, you know, if we don't have DOT, what's going to happen to our roads and mowing and everything? And all of us legislators, wait a minute, they're not mowing my counties anyhow, you know? Or if they do, they mow it once a year. But they are well overspent, and the MAP Act did a lot to them. They went in and bought a parcel of land, say from Ron, because they wanted to put a turning lane there. They wanted to put a ramp, on ramp or off ramp there, and Ron had 25 acres right there, and they didn't need but 5 acres. So they cheated him on the price and didn't consider the fact that the damage that was done to your remaining acreage, you have suffered financial loss by the way they were treating him. So you can imagine how much property was in that MAP Act across the state. And they all, some lawyers, did the math and calculated real quick, said, hey, we can win this, and they did. Now, some people said DOT went broke because of all the hurricanes came in. No, they reimbursed for all the money they spent on hurricanes. You keep records of that, and you get all your money back. What hurt them was several years ago, they decided they'd give a bunch of people raises, and a couple of people got $40,000-$50,000 raises at one time. That's a big increase. And then they asked me, why do you get mad? I said, well, you're paying me $13,950 a year to do what I'm doing, and you're begging me and fussing with me because you can't get a $40,000 raise. I didn't see that anyhow. Hospitals you'd be interested in, they set aside $65 million to go to rural hospitals. I think it's 28 of them that they're concerned, really concerned about. That would go down. So that's $65 million in rural hospitals to help them with that. They sent $15 million in North Carolina teaching hospitals and then $15 million for a general hospital relief fund. So that was a whole section. That was almost $100 million just to help the hospitals, and primarily the small hospitals. You know, the hospitals in North Carolina have really suffered. It's about $85 billion worth of income they've lost. That's elective surgeries per year in the state of North Carolina. So they're suffering. Not only because people said, hey, I don't want elective surgery, they were told not to operate. Then the hospitals went along with it because they didn't really want to operate, because how many patients would they lose in there with coronavirus patients and everything else running around? So it was a business decision that had to be made. Social services made out pretty good. There's about $32 million in there, extra $19 million for foster and child care, $6 million for food banks, and some of those were highlighted, and some of it is in our district. $5 million for community health centers, $5 million for free and charitable clinics, and $1.5 million for prescription for uninsured. This has never been done in North Carolina before.
The one question that I had about the revenue was that my understanding is that none of that revenue coming to the counties can be used to offset lost revenue, right? We can use it for dollars spent on the virus and other issues. But the main concern we have, and I know this was originally going to be addressed in that last federal piece that was going to give money directly to counties to, and you know, to offset revenue loss. Are we going to see that or something from the state in the next piece, lost sales tax dollars, lost fees, that's what's going to hurt us?
I would say it'd be in the next one. That's why it's not in this one, because when you bring that up, sales tax, first thing, their first flag that goes up is sales tax distribution. You know, it's going to come back, you know, okay, why don't we do an adjustment on the distribution of that sales tax? Collect it all and then divide it up evenly. You know, well, you know what's going to happen there. The big counties, but
Mac and Berthel.
The small rural counties, we outnumber the large wealthy counties. It's something like 80-20. We still are considered a rural small county state.
Sure.
And most of us from Eastern 95, we know we're all in we're in the same kind of counties. We fight tooth and nail all the time. I mean, to give you an example, to try to help the fishermen, we tried to get a thing in the bill. We thought we had it, wrote up a bill, put it in there, just to recognize the fishermen as independent small business people. Because if they're independent small business people, they can get some help. Well, it went to Rules Committee. We pushed it out of the House and sent it to Rules Committee. And when it come back in that ominous bill, I looked through all the pages and I couldn't find anything about fishing. They had thrown it out. And that's strictly politics. That's strictly politics, and it is a shame. They put an extra $9 million to help expand rural broadband. I think that's fine, but if they keep spending that money the way they've been spending it and say they will help us with rural broadband, they haven't. It gets to that state broadband initiative group, and that's where it dies. Now, had a bill passed last time, and they asked to introduce, and they put it on hold, but the co-op, the big co-op organization was in favor of it to put broadband capability on their infrastructure. And they wanted it because it would be better for them, for their service guys, and responding to storms and outages and everything else, if they could talk to their trucks and their guys and have everything right there. Them guys got a problem, they got to call an engineer. He's got to sit down and start drawing it out and asking them guys questions. Otherwise, with broadband, rural broadband that was big enough, they can do it, and he can tell them exactly what to do right there at the scene. So hopefully that will continue. $50 million to PPE equipment, make sure we got enough. $25 million to expand testing. We got a problem in North Carolina with statistics on people dying in the state from coronavirus, because in the hospital has, say, 5 deaths today. There might be 2 coronavirus. And the rest of them, heart attack or from cancer and everything. Well, because you're in that pandemic, everybody's claiming them as coronavirus patients. So the numbers, I got some numbers today. That's the first legitimate numbers paying since this coronavirus out of HHS, in my opinion, and everybody else. So enhance public health capacity, that's $20 million. $20 million for behavioral health, $25 million for financial support for assisted living facilities. You just don't know how bad this coronavirus has hit those assisted living facilities. You know, there's some of them around the country, everybody in it died. And one veteran's home assisted living, every veteran in there died. So that can be tough. Then they got money there for tracking. About $100 million for higher education for the community colleges and regular university systems. K-12 has got the longest line up here. $75 million for school nutrition, $70 million for summer learning programs, $11 million to improve K-12 internet connectivity. And that internet connectivity is in every section. And it, now, I don't know whether anything's going to happen. I'm eternally optimistic, you know, and the word eternally is key there, because it will probably be an eternity before we see it. But $30 million to K-12 schools for computers and other devices. I don't know why we don't go ahead and stop buying books. You know, by the time we receive the books, when we order them, they're outdated, and then warehouse up there full of books, never been used.
They're unbelievably expensive.
Yeah. $10 million for mental health and other student health services, $5 million for computers and other devices for school personnel, $4.5 million for cybersecurity at schools, and then some more. And that's some of the highlights there. Any questions on those?
Yes. I sent you some information about the health department and the way they were dispersing.
Are you the one that stirred that up at Abilene Health?
I did, yes. I assisted Mr. Battle with stirring the pot, yes.
Well, before Mr. Battle got there, that pot was stirred and they got an answer.
Okay.
So I was shocked when I got it from you and several more on that thing. So I said, wow, that's the same organization that got mad with me and called me and fussed me out because I voted in favor of a raw milk bill.
Uh-huh.
Well, yes. A legislator up in the mountains. People living up there, and one person will have a cow, and he raises the cow and milks the cow and everything. And you buy a cow, you buy a cow, you buy a cow, and give it to the farmer. And he houses your cow, feeds your cow and everything, and you pay him for that, and then you go get the raw milk, and it was for their own consumption. Well, everybody said, you're trying to kill people. I said, rights mean something. If somebody wants to drink, when I was growing up, I drank milk till the government forced pasteurization on us. And if you were using it, you had to have a pasteurization thing. And after that, I got off of milk. Now, if I drink a glass of milk, I'd have to ask Mrs. Smith, we'll hear it back. Even a calf stopped drinking milk after a while, right? But that was settled before Mr. Battle came, and I'm sure he was going through the information, and that hit again because a young lady used to work for him called me, her and another one down my well, and pounded me pretty bad. And I said, this is what it's going to be. This is how it is. This is why. And it was fine because really, if they looked at it, the distribution of it, they were coming out better.
Okay. That's not the way it was presented to us at our executive board meeting.
Well, you're coming out better than you were, but I expect that. I mean, if I was the head of that organization, I would say, hey, the General Assembly is really sticking it to us here. Y'all need to call them and get some help. But that question came up last year in the springtime, and I answered that question. So I want to see if it did. Hate and discontent would continue, but it happened.
Just trying to be a good board member.
Yeah, oh, I know. And I understand that, but they don't understand that distribution. And then you go back and look at the distribution previously and see and compare that to the distribution across the state. And did you come out a little bit better than everybody that time? And this time they cut you back some. I mean, that's what happens a lot of times. You know, you got some special provisions or something in there. But in talking to the health chairs, they said the answer is the same as it was last year when you asked us about it. It's the same thing. We haven't done another one. It's the same one from the last, in that last bill. And they said, we did adjust it, and that made it better. But we like to think the strength in numbers around here. Sometimes it hurts you. Sometimes it hurts you. You know, so, and it's kind of rare with that, but sometimes you're better off being on your own, it looks like. But then you find out when you do become on your own, you find out, well, this is bad. I'm getting more of this, but I'm not getting all of that. So it's, what do you do?
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, no, I think you've answered our questions about the revenue. We had concerns about that. The major concern was that, you know, are the counties going to be supported in terms of potential lost revenue. So whether that's going to come from the feds on their next round or whether that's going to come from the state, I think that's the portion that all counties are really looking for now.
Well,
so we're going to need that.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff now, to get it done quickly enough, we couldn't get it in there. You know, it was over 100 pages. I think it started off close to 200, then it was carved down to about 98 pages. So, where do you draw that line? And then I think they just put that into this next one because everything I read to you, and there's more than that in there, that will not come up in the next coronavirus deal.
Right.
You know, next they'll deal with those hits in your pocketbook, those hits in your wages or whatever, your income or your business or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, the counties, everyone I talk to in our counties around are very, very delighted to see what was passed, though, and what the governor signed. That's going to help in many, many ways. We had a lot of costs associated with the virus, and this is going to cover a significant portion of that. So,
and like I told you, I gave you the numbers, 120-0, mm-hmm. not a single no in there. Everybody was in favor of that, and that was pushed quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
I mean, that was pushed quick. Mm-hmm. There hadn't been one with that much money in it done in the state before. And we haven't had any financial bills since I've been there pushed as quick as this one was from beginning to passage.
Representative, thank you very much. That's tremendous. Thank you for being here, for coming to talk with us personally. We want to invite you back. That's for sure.
Well, if you tell Steve he pays for a big steak for him sometimes. I told him I'd come for a big steak. And he said, "Come on, I got you." So,
I want to know where you're going.
We're going to watch his expense account, okay? We'll see.
And Steve knows he's safe because we can't go get a steak anywhere. Not unless we go home.
All right.
Thank
you very much. The next thing on our appointments and reports agenda is consideration of a special meeting to approve the issuance of bonds for the Arizona Industrial Development Authority to finance the acquisition of the Windsor House. And Attorney Alark, if you could kind of give us some direction around that.
I was just telling Representative Goodwin how extraordinary was they did that in 3 days.
That's right.
Because I read it all this weekend.
It didn't feel like 3 days, though.
I'm sure,
I'm sure of that.
Late at night.
Thank you. The Arizona Industrial Development Authority is issuing basically money, and the assisted living facility here, the Windsor House, is owned by some people from Hong Kong, and I haven't really researched in great depth who that organization is, but the operator of the Windsor House, the Ahosky House, and the Williamson House, and I think maybe 90 other facilities within the state has got an opportunity to buy at least this house, and I think the other ones from their Chinese, and I won't use the word overlord, not as as a derogatory term, just as their landlord, I guess. And the Arizona, for whatever reason, and I don't really know, nor was it necessary for me to spend your money to find out, there's tax-exempt money out there if they qualify for it. And one of the requirements, and it's just an innocuous seeming but hidden in the IRS code, which required us to go find it, is that everywhere that a piece of property is going to be bought with these private activity funds, the governing body has to approve it. But you're not pledging anything. You're just saying, we think it's a good idea. And we looked at it, one, Jonathan and I had a conversation with the bond counsel and the other attorney representing the a group that wants to purchase it. They're out of Hickory.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to do a really good job. This is a chance. They're not going to do any major enlarging with this money, but they are going to try to do some upgrades. And this is one of the few acute mental facilities. Mm-hmm. And as we all get older, we certainly have experience with those people. So it seems like one of those very rare win-win situations. Now, I can tell you that because of the work of the General Assembly, they have now changed the public hearing requirement to deal with this remote issue, if you wish to do this. And our friends, I call them our friends, the people that want to buy this house, they need to do it by May the 28th, because they have been dealing with a bank. There's always a bank, no matter what you're doing, as I've learned in waiting through PPP and the coronavirus. They need to move by the 28th. The bank was slow, of course, but once the bank is ready, then you've got to go.
That's right.
Under Section 169A19.24B1, as it has now been rewritten, you can conduct a public hearing required during a remote meeting. And take action thereon, provided that you or any public body allows for written comments on the subject of the public hearing to be submitted between the publication of any required notice, which we have to give at least 7 days published notice. And we, today's Monday, I guess maybe you might get it in this week's paper, and then 24 hours after the public hearing. So you could do it, as I was counting on my fingers earlier, you could do it by 10 days. If you decide to do it, there is no liability to the county. I'm not urging you either to do it or not do it, but it does seem like a fairly unique opportunity to make this land that's owned by some people in Hong Kong who could give a toot about this part of the world. And we've got, what is it, 60 people in that? 60-bed facility.
Yes.
And they're suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's, and where would they go but not there?
Yeah. I think the main consideration for us, attorney, was, you know, whether or not there would be any potential liability for the county, et cetera. And now that we're confirmed that that would not be the case, I think you're right. I think it would be in our best interest to support.
You know, I'm cautious.
Oh, absolutely. I we want you to be.
And I promise you, you're not pledging the full faith of the county, full faith and credit of the county. You're not signing anything. All you're saying is you approve the fact they're going to do this.
That's right.
I think you made, when you said win-win, sort of answered the question, but just being devil's advocate, is that argument against this, I'm trying to see if I'm missing something here.
I couldn't think of one, and we really had, we had a pretty long discussion with them, because I had read up enough to be conversant with what it is, and it basically is, they're looking our, you know, it could be detrimental to them for not doing it, because, and frankly, they're getting a lower interest rate. It's not a great rate. It's about 8%, which, you know, when the banks are borrowing money from zero from the federal government, you have to wonder about that, but that's above my pay grade. I can't think of one. I mean, we really tried to come up with something that would endanger the county. And all we're saying is we're holding the public hearing and saying, if you want to spend this money in a tax-free way, it's okay with us. And it's just a requirement in the Internal Revenue Code. And for the life of me, I don't know why they got it there, but when I went back and looked at the legislative history of it, it apparently has something to do, you remember the 80s with all the savings and loans and all that stuff? They want to make absolutely sure everybody knows what's going on. I think it's a notice feature. And that's as good as I can't think of any way it hurts you, because it's not your credit that's being extended. You're not borrowing. So you're neither giving nor getting. All you're doing is saying it's fine with us if somebody from Arizona wants to lend you some low interest money to buy this thing.
Is the Arizona Industrial Development Authority, is that Americans?
It's all of
it's the state of Arizona.
We didn't look that up. It's,
yeah, they do. That's what they do a lot of that.
And they do a lot of this, sure, and it's a gigantic issuance that they're doing. And I may have gotten the technical term. I think it's PAC, private activity, or PAB bond. It's one, but it's the IRS, and I've got it here if you really want to be bored for me to read it to you. The IRS has got a long 18-page thing about how these interest rates are taxed, are tax-free, you know, which gives investors on a greater scale than, like our bonds, you know, mm-hmm. It's the same sort of thing. People want to buy them because they're safe, and it's a very well-known and huge operation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. When Manager Vaughn comes right back in the room, I think he has a schedule that we're looking at to be able to do this that would meet the time expectations that they would have.
And I would stress, if none of you want to be here, you just want...
Right, we could do it.
Juan and I to be here...
It could be done that way. Juan, I'm going to turn it to you, because I think you were looking at a schedule that we could use to be able to do this within the time frames that they were expecting, right?
Yes. With the 7 days that are required, you all can have it pretty much, it's up to you all. We can have it on Monday, the 18th, if that works for you all, or Wednesday, the 20th.
18th, the 20th. Commissioners on the phone, we're looking at dates. I hope you're hearing this clearly for special meeting. And Juan has proposed the 18th, which is a Monday, also the 21st. So what is your pleasure, Commissioners? And we can do that by phone. We don't have to be in person. They've accepted... that's fine with them if we just did it by phone, with all of us being by phone.
Yeah, either day works for me.
Yeah. I like Monday the 18th a little better.
I'm good.
Okay, how does Monday the 18th work? Is everybody good with that?
Yeah.
We have consensus, manage around the 18th.
Yeah.
Juan, will we?
What
time are you talking about on 18th?
Okay, well, we'll decide in just a second. What time would you like to do that on the 18th?
Morning work, 10 o'clock p.m.
10 o'clock? How's 10 o'clock has been suggested?
Okay, I'm good.
All right. Yes. Commissioner Trent, 10 o'clock work?
Yeah, let me ask you a question. This is a phone meeting in reference to what we were talking about just a second ago.
Yes, sir. Just a phone meeting that we would then consider this because we have to have the special meeting, right? And so this will be the way to do it. And we'll approve it, take the vote at that time, and it'll be done.
Right.
It has to be advertised first, so that's why the date's here. Workforce.
Before you vote, you like a regular open meeting, public hearing. You'd open up for additional questions, and then after. Now, you still have to let them submit questions. Let me make sure that they're like 24 hours after the public hearing.
Right.
So probably, I'm a little confused about that. I'm not sure if that means if somebody, can you pass it until you finish it?
Well, no, we talked about that, Laura. We talked about having the meeting, which we can do by electronically, and then 24 hours after if we don't get any questions, then we can pass this simply by ballot.
Okay.
Right, and vote by ballot, if that's okay with the board, right?
Now, if you definitely. Do remote, you can't do ballots by remote anymore.
What do you mean we can't do it by
remote? If you come all together, you can do a ballot by right, but they say if it's a remote-based meeting, they specifically, for some reason, put ballots out, you got to do it over.
I'm saying if we do the meeting openly, and then we come back and then vote on it via ballot. Right, right, yes. So we're good.
So we're going to be in person for the meeting.
Right. No. We do the meeting electronically. We come back, then still have to vote on it because we have to give it 24 hours after the meeting for questions.
And we'll be in person for that.
No, you can vote by ballot.
You can do that electronically.
Yeah, electronically or by ballot, either one.
Let me make sure. You got any swallows? Just ask you guys. Yeah. It says all votes shall be roll call. No vote by secret or written ballot.
Secret or written?
Or written ballot.
Okay. Well, can the county manager do a roll call with us electronically?
Yes.
Sure.
As long as people can call in.
Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Y'all can say
it. Probably you just have to have a very short electronic meeting and say the purpose of this meeting is to determine if there have been questions, somebody's going to need to answer the questions.
Right.
If there haven't been questions, then you just vote on the question.
The key thing, 24 hours after the 18th, we have to give the public a chance to raise any questions. So we can't take that vote until that 24-hour period is over, and we can be polled electronically to make that vote, right? We're good. Any other questions? We're good? Any other questions on the phone?
No.
Okay, we're good.
No questions.
Thank you, Laura. Now, the next on the appointments is the YMCA annual update by Executive Director Casey Owens. Casey, you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can. Coming through loud and clear.
All right. How y'all guys doing?
Right.
I'm going to try to make this. I couldn't hear you.
We're doing fine.
Okay, good. I try to make this brief, but, I always try to keep you guys in the loop of, our annual updates and things that we have done in the last year. In 2019, we served and impacted over 9,000 people. We just had to turn this in the middle of February to YUSA. So we impacted over 9,000 people in the last year. Our summer camp of 2019, we had about 150 participants. It lasted for about 8 weeks. It was 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock p.m., Monday through Friday. We did trips every week. They did enrichment every day, so we had licensed teachers that assisted us with the enrichment piece. We made a book from that, so it was really neat book that We showed the different things that they participated in and they done, and a lot of the kids that were in camp had actually never been outside of Burke T. County. So they got an opportunity to take trips outside of Burke T. They went to the museum in Raleigh. They went to some the Bird Park in, what was that, Scott Linette, if I'm not mistaken. It was a really great experience. Got really great feedback from the parents, from the county, the superintendent. He came by and he bought his board. He thoroughly enjoyed it. He loved it. This year, or 2019, was our first year doing an independent dance program. So we have done a dance program now for a few years, but we would just rent our facility. But in 2019, we wanted to do our own independent dance program, and we were able to do that, and we had 86 participants, 86 little girls that from K all the way up to 21, actually, that were participating in class, and we were gearing up to have our recital in June, but right now, you know, with everything that's going on, not too sure that's going to, well, more than likely that won't happen, but, you know, we were very, very pleased with the numbers that we got and the participation that lasted all year. I met with you guys, maybe that was August, where we partnered with the Burke T. Rec to, you know, have literally football. And they did it the year before, but they only had one team. But this year we had over 90 kids and we had three teams. So I was coaching the very little kids. We had a pretty decent year. All of the teams did exceptionally well. And we know that with each year we're going to grow. So the Burke T. Rec and the Burke T. YMCA said that we want to continue this partnership with getting the kids familiar with football at a young age. And I said, you know, if we pay close attention to these kids, when they become high school football players, you know, we're going to see the difference in the results because they picked up football at such a young age. So we're really excited about that. And we know, you know, the data that will show this will take some years, but we think it's well worth it. So we're looking forward to doing this partnership again this year. Our basketball program had over 400 participants with basketball and cheer. We had a theme each week. One of the themes was like anti-bullying, and we encouraged everyone to wear like orange. We did mental health, and we gave out green ribbons at the door. We highlighted the EMT, weather, PD, and the sheriff department one Saturday, and we just had them come to the game, and that was really neat, really nice. We didn't have the opportunity to play our championship game because of the pandemic and everything, but overall, the season was fantastic. And this was our first time doing a theme. So every Saturday, you know, the kids had something to look forward to, and people who were coming to the game to support their kids or friends had something to look forward to. Like, you wore a jersey. Everyone, we said jersey day, so everybody wore jerseys. It was really nice. Family and Friends Day was our very first Saturday, and we had reached out to Purdue and had a partnership there where we did chicken dinners and everything. So it went really well. Our membership increased 13% in 2019. We also did karate and we had the mental health walk. We did another mental health forum in February. We were pleased about, you know, the impact that we had on members, on youth, on our adult population, all across the board. So we want to continue to grow. We are greatly appreciative of the partnership with you guys. We will be meeting tomorrow with Dr. Smallwood, the superintendent, just to start talking to us, having conversations around, you know, how could we possibly or potentially still have summer camp? How would it look? Other YMCAs are doing kind of like virtual summer camps. I'm not really sure how that would look here. But, you know, we are hopeful that hopefully, you know, things will soon change. But we are greatly appreciative for the opportunity to partner with you guys and all the things that you guys do for us and all that we are able to do for the people in Burke T. County. So I just wanted to share that update with you and thank you guys so much for everything.
Well, thank you, Casey. And we are certainly all very pleased with the growth of our Y here and the services that you all have been able to bring to the program there. It's been exciting, and I think more and more people are getting involved. I will ask one question, Casey. I know that there was some concern that was, you know, voiced, I think, from your National Association or whatever, or the structure about the why here. Have those issues been resolved, or how does that stand?
Yeah,
I said we were aware that there had been some concerns between the local Y here and the national, organization in terms of, are those issues now kind of resolved? Are you guys still working through that, or?
We're sort of kind of still working through that right now. The issue that was brought to our attention was YUSA, which is global. That's the global thing. So you got the YUSA, and then we have YNC. And then, of course, YNC just reports to all of North Carolina YMCAs. Well, YUSA is in Chicago, and they came down and they had a meeting with us and was talking about they wanted to change the look of the brand. And one of the things that was a concern of theirs was smaller YMCAs, whether it's independently owned YMCAs, just smaller YMCAs across the board. And the question that we had was, what does that mean for us? And they did say that they felt like getting rid of smaller YMCAs was something they wanted to do. But, we did this with the board and myself, and we said, you know, we know our impact here in Brazos County is tremendous. So, you know, we wouldn't want to just do away with our Y. So the conversation then switched to, you know, do you partner with other YMCAs in the area, like maybe Elizabeth City, Currituck, I think you got Tarbell, Rocky Mount, or do you just kind of like change the name of our facility? So then the pandemic happened, so all the conversations kind of came to a pause, but our board, you know, we have been having conversations surrounding that and just trying to figure out how would it look, what do YUSA want from us? What can we do, you know, moving forward? So, you know, there was conversations with YUSA. There was conversations with our board. And I think we're just trying to get to the bottom of the solve and figure out what's next for us.
Great, Casey. That works for us. I mean, whatever we can do as a county, as a board here to support that, certainly call on us. But we certainly don't want to lose it. And you guys have done some great things there. So we'll try to support that any way that we can.
Okay, I greatly appreciate that. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for the work you've done. All righty. Any questions, other questions on the phone for Casey? What we got? All right. None? Great. Thank you. Thank you. Next on our agenda, we get down to board appointments, and we don't have any on for this month. So we're looking at the consent agenda. We have seven things on the consent agenda. If it pleases the board, I'd like to take the first three things with you together. As approved the minutes for the regular meeting 420, the closed session meeting 420, and the Register of Deeds reports for May of 20. I'd like to take all three of those under one motion, if that's agreeable.
I make a motion we approve consent agenda items 1 through 3.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Atkins. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. Item number 4, the tax release journal for March of 2020. I think you all had that in your package and a chance to look that over, all very small items. But any questions about that before we vote? None of those? Floor is open for a motion to approve the tax release journal.
I make a motion we approve the consent agenda item number 4, tax release journal.
Second.
It's been moved and properly second. All those in favor of approving the tax release journal for March of 20, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it and approved. Next, as we talked a little bit about the San Susie Ferry, in your package there is a resolution that was written and prepared for us. I think all of us got a chance to take a look at that. So that resolution is before you, and that we'd like to consider that resolution for submittal.
I make a motion we adopt the resolution for the San Susie Ferry.
Do I hear a second for that?
Second.
I think I heard it on the phone first. Commit Trent, I heard you second that. Was that correct?
Yes.
All right, been moved and properly second that we accept the resolution of support for the San Susie Ferry to North Carolina DOT. And Steve, I'd like to say that we need to make sure that resolution goes to anybody and everybody associated with this so they know exactly where we stand. All of those on the committee that would be dealing this, or others at DOT, whatever, they need to know where Bertie County stands around this, okay? Great.
I've been sending emails out since I could to all the congressmen, all the state, senators, everybody.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Let them know exactly where we stand. So that matter passes. Item 6, the approval of Holland Consulting Planners Incorporated, their work authorization number 6. Mr. Manager, is there anything in particular we should learn about that or know about that other?
Nothing.
This is just a regular schedule.
Of the DRA.
Great, great, great. So if there are no questions, the floor is open to approve that work authorization number 6.
Commissioner Bazemore moves
yes.
to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner Bazemore. Do I have a second?
Second.
Commissioner Lee. All those in favor of approving Holland Consulting work authorization number 6, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, it is approved. And the last issue, which is I think is very interesting and very well done when I got to study this in a package, is the approval of a capital improvement plan for the Part F grant. So that is in your package. I hope everybody got to see that. And I hope our citizens, and that this document is online. Is that correct?
Not yet, but it can be.
Okay, great. I think we want to make sure that we post this so the citizens can see all of the different things that we have planned around not just Part F, but economic development and all the other key issues for the county that we've been working on. Some of those have been kind of put on hold a little bit as we deal with this coronavirus. But this is kind of the long-range plan for what we want to do and the key issues around economic development and others. But it directly impacts the Part F grant, all right? So, again, the floor is open for consideration on approval of the capital improvement plan for the Part F grant.
But this is not anything set in stone.
No.
I mean, we can come back and readjust it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, we said that. Commissioner Trent, I heard you make the motion, but
yeah.
Commissioner Lee was saying that, and that is true, that this is just our best guess, our best plan so far. Anything can be changed as we go forward, but I think it's an interesting document in terms of the things that we have on the table. So thank you, Commissioner Trent. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion's made and approved, and second by Commissioner Lee. All those in favor of approving the capital improvement plan for the Part F grant, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Great. That is a beautiful piece of work. And when we post that, I ask all citizens to take a good look at that. I think you'll be impressed. Next on our agenda is discussion items D. The first one is the budget amendment and updates from our finance director, William Robertson. William, are you there?
Yeah, I think I got unmuted. Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir. We sure can. Coming through loud and clear.
I've actually heard a lot of updates been done throughout the meeting, so I really don't know how much updates I have. But I do have this budget amendment, and hopefully it's in your packet. And the first line item talks about a Franklin P. and Arthur W. Purdue Foundation relation about the $25,000 check for COVID-19 response for the organization. So that was given to the Council of Agents.
Yes, that is in our package.
Yeah. And then the next one that follows was an update from the Department of Public Safety. Three organizations which they represent through JCPC, Children Matters, Teen Court, and State Chance. They have come out with what they call discretionary funding, or sometimes they call it expansion funding. So they're giving those three organizations some additional money. So I've added them in there so we could put them into their budget as well. So I'm asking for approval of these two items.
Okay.
I make a motion we approve the budget amendment.
Two of them, both items.
Both of them.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's been moved that we approve both of the budget amendments presented by Finance Director Robinson. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and properly second. All those in favor of approving both amendments, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you, William. Anything else for us, or is that it?
That's pretty much it. Everything else, biggest thing everybody's concerned about is sales tax, and we still don't know how this is going to turn out, so let's wait and see game.
Right, right. I have some comments about that, but I'll save that until a little bit later in terms of kind of our budget preparation and things that we need to get a great head start on for the new budget. But I'll save that till later. Thank you, William. Second is the first read of the proposal of the Commissioner's Rules, Policies, and Procedures. Manager Vaughn.
Yes, this is something that I shared with the board a little bit about following up our last meeting. Since we've been having our Zoom phone calls, we've had to meet virtually since this pandemic, and this is something that I wanted to share with you all in terms of establishing rules and procedures for conducting our meetings virtually or telephonically. So you had an opportunity to take a look at them. It's listed here on the agenda for you all to have some discussion at this particular point. If there are any particular rules that you would like to take out altogether or amend, or if there are any other rules that you would like to include that are not listed here, that is something that we can do as well. But it's really here for you all to just discuss and to come up with some operating rules and procedures for virtual meetings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think there was anything, Lloyd, that was decided by the legislature that alters what we have here in this document, my understanding.
Well, we think there is. Well, because the only way, I mean, they say the only time you can do this stuff is when a state of emergency is in play.
Right, and that is what we're under now, right?
That's correct.
Right.
What I'm saying is these rules don't say that they're limited to a state of emergency. So,
oh, I see your point.
You know, obviously the legislature, you know, we spent a huge amount of time, and I was hoping the legislature would do exactly what they did to eliminate any question, but by doing this, the legislature's told you didn't have the authority to do this until they gave you the authority. They've now given you the authority, but they've only given it to you when you're in an impacted area under a state of emergency. For example, God forbid that we have a hurricane this year on top of COVID, but you know, you declare, Mr. Chairman, just a state of emergency for Berkeley County, then these rules are great. I like all of them. I wish you could do them straight up because it would make my life easier, honestly, but the legislature states right in the beginning of their enabling action that, you know, remote meetings, it says, you know, there has to be a Article 1 of Chapter 160A, which is the emergency declaration chapter, which I've spent more time looking at in the last 4 weeks than I ever thought I would in my entire life. So you can't do this unless it's under somebody's declared a state of emergency. Other than that, the rules we think are great.
Okay.
Since the legislators have done what they've done, do we even need this document?
Well, they don't require you to be 6 feet away, for example, which, you know, maybe you don't need that when we get out of COVID, and if you want to have a hurricane meeting and huddle around a map, that's different. You know, this is so tailored, what you have here, directly to COVID, whereas what the legislature passed was recognizing that we're in the 21st century, and some of their rules, as I told you in that letter I sent you, that nobody ever thought about this stuff in 1973. You couldn't have Zoom or laptops or lots of stuff. So that's up to y'all to decide. That's way above my pay grade. All I'm saying is if you adopt these, they can apply in an emergency. You know, if you're going to do telephonic communication, Zoom, keep the public from being in the room, that's fine. There's no problem with it as long as it's within a state of emergency.
Right, so it's a suggestion then that if we add it to this, that these are the rules that apply while we're in the state of emergency, then that would be fine. I think that was kind of our intention, really.
I thought it was, it just doesn't say it.
Exactly, I get you.
I would put not inconsistent with what the General Assembly has passed in 168, Chapter 166A, and that would eliminate any question because obviously, I don't think there's anything in here that conflicts with anything the General Assembly
right.
did.
That's correct.
But I mean, I've had 2 days to look at this. office.
Okay.
I've had 45 years to look at the old hall.
So we just need to add during the state of emergency to the title of this thing.
That's correct.
Yes, sir.
And I want to defer to my two commissioners on the phone because a lot of these things had to do with the remote meeting and they've been there on these last few occasions. So, Commissioner Bazemore, Commissioner Trent, are you satisfied hearing what you did, what you heard the Lord refer to earlier about the changes from the legislature? You've got a chance to see what's in the package. Lord is suggesting that we need to add the statement here that these guidelines or rules are pursuant while we're under the state of emergency.
And that would be any state of emergency.
Any state of emergency.
I would like to say, Chairman, that I think I looked over it, and I have no problems with the rules. But please understand that I just always thought it was just through the state of emergency, because even when we had just for this pandemic, because even when we had a state of emergency, we still were able to come together when it was a hurricane, tornado, whatever. Only during this time, it wasn't feasible for all of us to be present. Because we do have asymptomatic carriers.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to take that chance. But I like the rules. I'm good with it. And it can be just as it is. Usually I am there. Maybe out of the 6 years, I may have missed 2 meetings
no.
Max.
No.
I am good.
I agree, Commissioner Bazemore. And that was the intention here because, I mean, you are an active part of this meeting, so it's not about whether you're here or there. We're all together as one board, and we have that opportunity here. But I think our attorney is advising us that these rules we put here can really only apply to, in fact, a state of emergency. This one we're in, yes, but any other state of emergency. So we just need to be aware that this is the restriction that we have at this point. All good? Commissioner Trent,
yep.
All good?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All here good?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Great.
Yep.
Thank you. So so do we need a motion or do we can do this on consent or we need a motion?
Is this the first reading?
Yes. Do we need a second?
Is this the first reading?
It is listed. It is listed as a first reading. But if you think it requires a second, that's fine. Or if you think that we're satisfied with the first reading, or do we have to have two?
You can set your own rules as to how you work as long as they're consistent with the legislature. So if y'all want to approve this tonight by motion,
right.
I would think you'd at least want a motion and a second.
Yeah, I'd like, unless there's some disagreement about going ahead and approving this rather than having to bring it back, and since we're all in agreement that it is what we wanted. All right, so.
Okay, when you said first reading, I thought there would be a second reading.
Well, they can be.
I am good with it, and I'd like to make a motion.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm good. If we can do it without a second reading, I am good, and I would like to move that this be accepted with the necessary amendment.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Benjamin. I hear a second. Second, I think I heard from Commissioner Trent. Great. So, it's been moved and properly second that we accept this first reading as our final reading, and the motion has been made to approve. Do I hear a second? We have a second. We're ready for all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Thank you all. Thank you very much. The third thing.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, just one question. I've had a couple of people that, employees ask me, matter of fact, today, in the future, at our meetings where all the commissioners are present, and this, that, and then, can we continue with Zoom where they can listen into the meetings without having to come to the meeting place?
Yeah, I've had those same recommendations too, Commissioner Trent, from several citizens.
And I think it's very important to keep people informed, people that don't have transportation. And the other thing is too, if we're not going from town to town, this, that, and the other, it gives everybody the opportunity to be able to tune in to one of our meetings.
Very true. I think on our last meetings, we probably had more people on those calls by far than we would normally have here in the commissioner's room. So anything that makes it more transparent and more open to all of our citizens, I think that's a good thing. So,
and I think it is too, and I think it's something we need to really highly consider here.
Yes, I would agree. So I would ask the county manager to let's look into that and see how we can, we'll certainly continue while we're under COVID, but see how we perhaps even can enhance it. You know, there's a way through Zoom to be able to even have camera in the room if we wanted to, and people could see it, or just have it so you can hear it. But there are a lot of additions we could add to it via Zoom. So.
Well, we got to get the beauty parlors and barbershops back up before we get the cameras going.
If you saw my hair right now, you'd know I'm all for that. Afros are back in style, I want to tell you.
I got mine in a ponytail right now.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Lloyd told me he was growing a ponytail also.
Now, so item four on the agenda is the COVID update from Emergency Services Director Mitch Cooper. Mitch, I know you were here a bit early. You still there?
Yes.
No, excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Go
I'm here.
I'll go back to three. Go ahead, Mitch, since I got you on the phone real quick.
Okay. All right. Wanted to give a quick update this evening about COVID-19. The county currently stands at cases total are 48, with 15 of those being active, 31 cases being recovered, and, of course, as we've spoken earlier, about the two deaths in Berkeley County. In our task force meeting this morning, we had a lengthy discussion about what we were planning to say in this meeting tonight. And, you know, we wanted to talk about the May 8th to the governor trying to start his phases to reopen the economy for North Carolina. If you read the phase one, it pretty much does not change the operations that we're going to see throughout our county. It's really for big retailers, for clothing, sporting goods, houseware. A lot of our facilities here that are considered to be essential. So we don't see a lot of changes coming for phase one to our area. We do see some areas that are like boutiques and all that are still operating online and have some things day to day. But phase two is going to be really the large effect for Berkeley County, and that the way it's written could be all the way to June 1st before we see that come into effect. The largest thing that we wanted to discuss tonight and put on the table is that with us looking at preserving the continuity of government and protecting the employees that are here, is to make a recommendation that when phase one comes into effect May 8th, if the governor does go forward with this on Friday, is that we continue to operate our county operations with restrictions of the public coming into the building except by appointment only. The reason we're making that recommendation is because with our current trends, we're still seeing an upward tick of our confirmed cases and our active cases. We have not yet made it to that point that the governor's recommendations from the CDC and from his office of a 14-day level or a decline in cases and active cases in our county. That is strictly the information for our county. That does not entail other counties throughout the state. This is just us looking at our cases. Everybody knows that Berkeley County is a high-risk county. We have populations over 65 is over 4,000. Households below the poverty level are over 3,000. Households receiving food stamps and SNAP is over 2,000, and households with disability are over 3,000. That puts us at a high risk, and with other counties getting ready to open up, and as the news had it a while ago, Beaufort County said they were going to open up, regardless it looked like, is that as our folks get out and start traveling and our asymptomatic carriers are out and about, it puts us at high risk with our vulnerable population, which we have a lot of in Berkeley County. So that's our recommendation for our operation going forward on May 8th, as far as for our county operation.
Great. Thank you, Mitch. I want to throw it open to the board, to those here, those on the phone. Any discussion around that? Are you in agreement? Do you have questions for Mitch? Any concerns?
I
Yes, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, if I can speak on that, I have to agree with what Mitch Cooper is saying. We haven't seen a downtick. We keep seeing an uptick, okay? And not that I think that the state needs to be closed down and our businesses need to be kept shut, but at this time, I don't think that we're in that position to be able to do anything more than what we've done. I also think that I was talking to Senator Steinberg. He called me and asked me some information on this. And my comment to him was, I think it needs to be left up to the individual counties, emergency service directors, individual counties, and the county commissioners and county manager, as far as opening up under different phases where we thought we were at the time. And then hypothetically, emergency service director for the state of North Carolina, which would be Mike Sprayberry, and have somebody such as Charles Tripp over five counties would stay in touch with Mitch Cooper, and as soon as we reach these phase qualifications as far as being passed, then we could go and open up in the phases that we qualify to open up under and go from there. But we keep seeing this uptick in cases, and I think, I don't know if it was this weekend, I think that the county manager sent out, and I think that the zip code for the Windsor district had 30 cases. Of course, not all of them are active at this time, but they have had the highest amount. Is that correct, Mr. Manager?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you see this, and it keeps moving. Now, again, Senator Steinberg agreed with that conversation and as far as opening up, but in phases, and the county commissioners being a big play of this, county managers, of course, emergency service directors, and having things set apart. So anyhow, make a long story short, that was conversation that was had.
Yeah, and I think you're right. A couple of things. You know, we talk about Windsor, and Windsor's numbers are high, and I think the primary reason for that is because the prison counts are in that with the town of Windsor. And if we know of the number of people who have been tested so far at the prison, these were primarily workers and had a very high count. And so that counts with
the Windsor
numbers.
Yeah, I think we had three at Bertie Correction officers or correctional officers, then one inmate, and then it increased from there a few.
That's correct.
I don't think there's any extreme numbers
at
Bertie Correction.
Yeah, the last count I saw of inmate tested positive was 10 at Bertie.
Right.
So. Well, how many?
10, and that was on the DPS website.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Right. Again, that still drops back to a 20 mark, 18 mark right in that area for the area itself in that zip code area. But make a long story short, we still keep getting this uptick.
Right. I think you're right. Any comment?
We have 10 cases in the prison.
That was the last.
Yes.
Yes.
They hadn't updated over the weekend. I looked. Yeah.
County's cases in prison.
And then when you throw in the nursing home, that add to that the vast majority. But that's true, I think, in most cases, places where they have institutions like that, like nursing homes, or we're lucky at Purdue, we've only, you know, had, what, just a couple of cases, but a lot of factories and things like that and other prisons.
Pastor Tank's numbers are real high.
But again, you still have people that are living in the area and things of that nature, that are, Commissioner Bazemore said, are asymptomatic, and this thing is still traveling in the area.
No question. Comments? Commissioner Lee.
Yeah, I haven't heard nothing negative about us being closed off to the public. I'm in full agreement to take their recommendation.
Commissioner Bazemore. Commissioner Bazemore? You on mute?
Sorry about that. I was still on mute.
That's
I was
all right.
Talking away.
Okay.
I would. Yep, okay. I totally agree with Mitch, and whether we stay open or closed, I trust that now Bertie County will do the right thing. They have been. We are much better than what it was initially. Of course, the numbers are still going high, but that's from the fact when people didn't really believe what was happening. So I agree with Mitch, and we'll just take our time, and those who know they have underlining conditions know what they need to do,
right,
and take care of themselves, and that's everyone.
Well, I would add my comments, my support as well to the recommendations by Mitch. I think we're doing the right thing. I also want to compliment the citizens, though, because I think there was a little study, I don't know how intense it was, but it rated the counties in terms of those complying with distance rules, and we were given a B-, which was one of the only four counties in the state given that level. That's impressive. I mean, it seems like sometimes when you walk around, you see a lot of people who are not in compliance, but you go to some other places, and I think you see even more. So I want to say to our citizens, let's continue to follow the guidelines. It is making a difference, and I think it will continue to keep us as safe as we possibly be. All right, so it looks like, Mitch, that we have our consent, at least, across the board. I don't know if we need a motion, manager, at this point on that, but we certainly have the consent for the board, Mitch, that we're going to kind of stay where we are. So thank you. Anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Great. So last thing we have on our regular agenda is commissioner's reports. No, excuse me. I missed number three. I skipped number
three. Are you going back to number three?
Yeah, I am. I'm sorry that I skipped that. It's a discussion of the 2020 Riverfest Fest, which was scheduled for June the 6th. I'm sorry I missed that. So what is your pleasure around that? Or let's open it up for a little discussion around that date.
I would be concerned if we have large crowds like we did last year, and it's too risky.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Bazewell, you were going to speak. I heard you.
Yes. Certainly, I feel that June 6th is too close for us to have the fest like we would want it to be. And I think it would be a better idea to still open it up in time, but take what we would have used for this fest to fix it up, use the money to better the roads and other things there that we may need, and perhaps not focus on the fest this year during this pandemic. Because I've seen when we have other things going on and there's a crowd, that's when the coronavirus really kicks off again, and we certainly do not want that here in Berkeley County.
I would agree.
Can I give you a perfect example to follow up with Ms. Bazemore? Is that, I mean, they opened up beaches in Jacksonville, Florida, and overnight, not overnight, but a few days later, they all of a sudden had a surge in one day of 18 more cases, 18 cases per day. I don't even know if we're in a position to set a date at this time and even think about a date. Until we get closer to where we need to be.
Yeah. Commissioner Atkins.
I would suggest canceling it for this year. We're not really having any more proper discussion about doing it this year. We'll start looking at next spring.
I would like to say I appreciate the work that the committee has done, and just keep all your notes, and like Commissioner Atkins said, you know, it's always next year.
Yeah, and you know, and the facility is open, so it's not like a, quote, a grand opening, right? But I would agree that the 6th of June is just too soon. So, you know, I think the consensus is that we don't want to do that, right? And we don't necessarily have to do anything. I think we should, you know, look at the situation. Who knows where we'll be in August or something, and if we might want to have something where September even, you know, we could still have a festival concerning the property, but that's to be determined, right, down the line. So right now I think the consensus is that we definitely want to cancel June the 6th, right? We'll leave this thing open, but we're appreciative of the work of the committee. We'll decide as time goes and our situation, do we want to consider it a later date or not, all right? Good. Everybody's good with that? Great. All right. Thank you all. So now to commissioner reports. Commissioner Atkins? Okay. Commissioner's on the phone. Commissioner Trent? Commissioner Cummings,
yeah,
sir?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had mentioned earlier that I had some citizens talk about keeping Zoom available even after we come off the state of emergency. I brought that up. I think everybody was, you're going to be county manager checking into that. I've also had people call, and I've had two phone calls in reference to census complaints. Nobody in the Lewiston area. I've had people ask me today. I had one phone call today and one the other day in reference to they haven't received anything reference census. Nobody's advising them. Maybe we can get some sort of mailer put into the water bill that we're mailing out so that people understand what's going on with the census report, what the delays are. I think they read the newspaper that Askeville had already gotten theirs. Next question I have is, where are we sitting at with the audit?
Okay.
That's a very good question, Commissioner Trent. Finance Director William Robertson and I reached out to the auditors, I'll say a couple weeks ago, and they actually told us that we would have something very soon here. But since we have not heard anything at this time, I think it's time for us to reach back out to them. And we'll do that again this week and let you know exactly when we can expect it. But yes, that's exactly where we are.
Yeah. Commissioner Trent, on the census issue, I think the Census Bureau is telling us that all of the letters have not been mailed out yet, unfortunately. I don't know if they're doing it by sections. I certainly received mine like over a month ago, right? And if you remember, I did the robocall to everybody and gave a number that you can call mm-hmm. proactively, and they will do it over the phone to you. And at our last meeting, we suggested, I believe, to Tracy that she use that mm-hmm. number to advertise that number so citizens don't have to wait. And I can tell you that people
well, we
are
also
called.
Talked about going through the municipalities also.
That's
and
correct.
I don't think they're getting that word out. And okay. I explained to the two people that called me in reference to it, the steps we've gone through. And I'm just suggesting maybe if we put a mailer in the bill, the water bill, that everybody's going to get, especially in the West Bertie County area, because they haven't received anything, just to give them an ease of mind on this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think we can certainly do that. I think the key is to give them that number so that they can call and you don't have to wait. And it only takes a few minutes.
Exactly.
I mean, the citizens that I gave it to, three of the four got back to me and said, great, that was so easy. You know, it's easier than actually filling that out, to talk to somebody to do it right over the phone with you. So I think it's a good suggestion. And let's pass that on to Tracy and to Sarah. Let's get the number out. And I'm not sure why we don't have anything yet to the municipalities, but we need to make sure that that is done too.
Okay.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, great. Commissioner Bazemore.
Yes. I would like to ask for the board members to consider a virtual town hall. I think it's in order so the citizens will know what's going on and things like the census. We can talk about the schools, and when they open up, we can invite them as well. And Corbett talk about what are we doing, the after effects. And I would love to even have, if anyone is willing that has had the virus, to explain to others some of the symptoms of what they went through or whatever. And so we will know, in case it comes again, what we need to do. Just informing the whole community at the same time. And also, I'm not sure the date yet. They will let me know. USDA will be sending boxes of fruit and vegetables to Bertie County. And I want to publicly thank Mr. Nick Nicholson and Mr. Ron Robertson for the use of their building. It will be stored there, and we will ask citizens to please come and pick it up.
Right.
And if this year we are able to come together, I would like to have a memorial service for those who passed, and I know we have two, for those who also passed during this pandemic and was not really, people were not able to attend the service. So we would like to do a memorial service at the auditorium to bring Berkeley County together and let them know that we do care and that it's something I want everybody to think about. And that's probably up the road before we are able to come together. That's all I have at this time.
Well, I would certainly agree. Those are great comments. And I think the last thing you mentioned about having that, I don't know if the proper word is a celebration or whatever, but after this thing is, we're beyond the worst of it, you know, to have some way of bringing folks together and to honoring those who have survived and also those who passed would be a great thing to do. So we can do that. We can pass these recommendations on to the committee. County manager and make sure and see an appropriate time that we can kind of move forward with some of this. Sounds like a very good idea. Very, very good idea. Thank you. Thank you. I have just a few comments. I'll piggyback on one thing that Commissioner Bazemore just said, slightly different, but talked about the fruits and vegetables coming in to Ron Robinson and Mr. Nicholson. Also, Berkeley County has been approved as one of the counties that's going to receive significant amount of food support. And it's going to be, when I say significant, I mean significant. And we've asked Donna Mazzell to lead this effort. And it's going to be distribution of food across the county, targeting areas where we right now don't have good food distribution. I mean, we have some of the food pantries in several of the communities, but there are several communities that don't have it. And so this is going to allow Donna and her group to target those communities with these significant food products that we can get to them, very similar to what you now had to qualify at the food bank to get, even though now they've opened it up to everybody over the last, as part of Corona. But this will bring a significant amount of nourishing foods and things to people in this county, and I think it's going to make a real, real difference for us. Okay, so that I wanted to say one other thing, and I wrote these remarks, so I'll just read them briefly. We all know that this body and the county is required to operate under the constitutional mandate of a balanced budget. We also know that the potential loss of revenue through sales tax shortfalls, loss fees, etc., could significantly impact our current and upcoming budget considerations. I want to thank Governor Cooper and both the House and Senate leadership for their bipartisan efforts to help us address public health issues, the economy and business concerns of all of our citizens that they announced today. We know that there are still some significant issues that need to be debated, making sure that unemployment funds are still available and perhaps even increased, as one of the House members mentioned. The safety net, making sure that it's in place, and that what will happen to us as a county, as a state, after the federal fund assistance run out? What is the state going to be prepared to do for local government? We should hear more from the governor tomorrow or Wednesday, and even more on Friday when he will discuss the restrictions on COVID-19 that are currently in place. Across Berkeley County, we've been blessed to have numerous organizations, churches, and nonprofits who are committed to helping ease the pain of the coronavirus. I am personally asking every business, every organization, and every citizen to ask ourselves, what can we do to help others in need all around us? You know, it could be as simple as checking on your neighbors or family members, or lending a hand, or lending some financial support to a food pantry or any other worthwhile cause. And I think the main thing is together, small things can really make a big difference. So I would encourage all of our citizens and businesses to help support those in need around the county. I think that need is going to be there for a while, unfortunately, and if anything that we can do to help ease that with those who are suffering would be a blessing. Great. That's it for me. So,
thank you.
Yes.
So, tomorrow, speaking of food,
tomorrow in Powellsville at 11 o'clock, we will have our mobile food pantry. So, yeah, if you can get there, please come. Last month, they had, we gave out a lot of food. There was a lot of food.
4,000 pounds of chicken.
Also, tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Carpenter Shop over in Ahoski, they've done this for the last several years. They have 40,000 pounds of sweet potatoes, and they're all free. You just come bring your bag and fill up however many bags of sweet potatoes that you want. I also have had the honor of being selected to serve on the National Association of County Commissioners Board of Directors as I will be filling the seat that Ray Jeffers held, and it's the 100 county
participation
seat. So I am honored, and by serving on that seat, it automatically puts me on the North Carolina Associational Seat Board. So I am honored to be able to represent North Carolina and represent Berkeley County on those seats. So thank you.
Okay. Congratulations. Congratulations. That's it for us for the commissioners, county manager reports.
No reports tonight.
Okay. County attorney?
It says here I'm supposed to give guidance on voting. Congratulations. Y'all run just about the perfect meeting as far as the statutes go. The new statutes give you great flexibility, and once you declare it or the governor or any greater authorities declared an emergency area, the requirements are that we give notice and basically that you be transparent, that the public has a way of listening in, and if there is audio present, and the statute seems to suggest live streaming with audio is preferred, which, you know, this is probably the first meeting under the new rules, so we've done pretty good, I think. We're just missing a video camera. Those commissioners who are not present have to identify themselves at the beginning of the meeting and each time a vote or a motion is taken. And Mr. Chairman, you've done a good job of making certain that was followed. The minutes have to reflect who was here or not here. You're deemed absent as a commissioner if the simultaneous connection breaks down for whatever reason. If your phone gets disconnected for 5 minutes, you're out. But then you can come back in. And I think for the commissioner's sake, and y'all don't do a lot of this anyway, I do not believe, but any chats, instant messages, texts, or written communications between members of the board regarding the transaction of public business during the remote meetings are deemed public record, so do not text one another and say, God, this is boring, or whatever, because it's going to go into the minutes. The concerns have been, as I think y'all have always tried to do, is be very transparent, and the idea is to, and it's interesting to me that you've had more people participating remotely than you've ever had in this building, except when you had hunting dogs or a landfill. So I've been to both of those. And I'm not making light of any of those. But it's interesting that you do have a greater participation, because we're a big rural county, and I think it's good for folks. And I think the legislature went out of their way to recognize that there is life east of I-95. And I do have two very short matters I need to discuss in closed session.
Okay, great. All right, now, before we go into closed session, we want to make sure that we open up for public comments. So, Sarah, I know you're there, and if you have any questions already that you've already received, direct them our way.
Hi, Mr. Chair. At this time, I have no questions.
All right, well, All right, let's make sure that the citizens know on the phone that the lines are open. You can direct your question directly to Sarah. She'll pass it on to us. You can email that to her. But we want to make sure that we give you a few moments if you have any concerns, any questions that you'd like to ask. We want your participation.
Mitch, are you still with us?
Yes, ma'am.
I did have a question by way of Facebook Messenger from someone asking about drive-through testing. North Carolina's not doing any, are they?
They're in certain parts of the state, but the closest one I've heard about today that is only free if you're symptomatic or a healthcare worker would be Walmart and Greenville. But as far as a state-ran testing, mass testing, it's been some of the bigger counties. It hasn't been any of the rural counties. No, ma'am.
Okay.
Sarah, do we have any questions?
No, sir. I have not received any questions or comments.
All right. Great, then. Well, just want to say before we close this portion, not close it, but before we go into closed session, I wanted to thank all those citizens who took the time to be a part of this, to listen in for us. You know, you don't have to ask questions here. If you do have any questions that come to mind, please send them to us our way. But we appreciate your taking the time, and please be safe out there. Be safe. So now I'd like to open the floor, take a motion to go into closed session.
I make a motion we go into closed session under General Statute 143-318-11A1 and A3.
Great. It's been moved. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Moved and properly seconded. We go into closed session under the restriction read. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? We're in closed session. Thank you, public. We're going to close down, and we will be back after the closed session.
While we...